Welcome to Driven to Business with your host, Eddie Mayfield. Driven to Business is a business forum program that focuses on success principles in business. And now, it's time for Driven to Business.
Good morning and welcome to this week's edition of Driven to Business. I am Eddie Mayfield. We're glad you're here. By the way, we're streaming live on biz1190.com and we will be podcast on eddiemayfield.com. So check us out there. We're here every Saturday morning on WAFS, Atlanta's Biz 1190. Have a great guest today. Our guest today is Mike Davis. Mike is the Director of Admissions and Student Services for Belhaven University. Mike, welcome to Driven to Business.
Thank you, Eddie. It's good to be here.
Mike, I was reading a little bit about a couple things you had written in the past, and you had said that one of the things that you really enjoyed about helping students obtain master's degrees is the difference that a master's degree made in your life and career. And I was wondering if you'd like to talk to us about that a little bit.
I'd be glad to. I was a traditional undergrad student, went straight out of high school, got my bachelor's degree in the 4 years. And rather than going on to graduate school immediately, at that point it would have been seminary, I went right into full-time ministry. And one of the things that I regretted most in looking back over my life was that I did not continue my education when it was at the easiest time of my life to do so.
Right.
And so at the age of 33, I took a new position at East Texas Baptist University in Marshall and realized that the Lord had called me into a new field of ministry, higher education. And if I was going to do anything significant in higher education, I had to have a master's degree. And so at the age of 35, I started back earning my master's degree, going one night a week, taking classes, raising a family, working a full-time job, and serving a church part-time. And I kept thinking to myself how much more easy that would have been if I had done it at 22 instead of at 35.
You know, I was never the typical college Joe either. I went to in the military, mm-hmm. and then to college. So when I graduated from college, I had two kids. So, and I should think about that too. That would have been a lot easier to do rather than working full time, having to support a family, have children and all that, a wife and all that, and go to school. But honestly, in my case, Mike, I'm not as smart as you probably. I went to college for a year before going in the military. This was all during Vietnam and everything. Mm-hmm. And, did not do well in college, but after maturing a bit in the service and coming out, and especially when it's your money you're spending and you're no longer under your parents, you're doing this for yourself and it's your own pride on the line here. I made almost straight A's in college. It's attitude's everything, isn't it, about college?
I had the same experience. As an undergraduate, I was not singularly focused on my education. Of course, I was looking to find a wife, and I was looking to have a good time, and I was looking to do all the other right. things that are associated with going to college. And my grade point average reflected that. And 13 years later, when I went back and was spending my own money and was supporting a family and serving a church and all of that, it was amazing how much better my grade point average was.
You know, we talked about that I went to college although I took a full-time load, I was actually also working full-time when I was doing it. And you went back and got your graduate degree sort of on a part-time basis. A recent article in Forbes magazine actually says that the majority of people pursuing I think they particularly talk about an MBA, but a master's program, are in effect doing it part-time. Does that surprise you at all?
Well, not at all. So many people realize that after they've matured a bit, like you and I have done, that the master's degree is the key to unlocking so many doors of opportunity.
Maturing is a very polite word you're using. I appreciate that.
Well, you're quite welcome, because you and I seem to have matured at the same rate. But nonetheless, once you get a little bit of that maturity in you and you realize there's just so far I can go up the corporate ladder or advance my career without right. proper training and education, and I need to go back to school. And so many guys, like myself, we can't afford to uproot our families and live, you know, hand to mouth like we have been. We have obligations financially. We have children to raise and things to provide for them. And so going back part-time is the only way to do it. And so it doesn't surprise me at all that so many of the graduate students are doing part-time school while doing full-time career.
You know, as we had sort of said and joked about a little bit earlier, there, I do think that when you're an older, and by older I don't mean the age I am now, but older than a typical college age student, and you're in class, there is a tendency where you do not want to be making bad grades in there. Maybe it's a pride on the line or whatever, but my experience is people that do that tend to make pretty good grades.
That observation is pretty accurate. Another factor into that scenario is the fact that oftentimes adult students, or non-traditional students as we like to call them, are doing homework at the same kitchen table as their kids are.
Right.
And so when mom and dad says, show me your report card, the kid replies, well, show me yours first. And so modeling as a parent is an important aspect of going back to school, showing that education indeed is important, and it's important to do your very best. And so it's a point of pride, like you've said, but I think it's also a responsibility to model it for our children.
You know, that same Forbes article addressed another sort of a question, and I think a lot of folks have, is that these degrees do cost money. They're rarely free for anybody. So when you go back and you spend the money, does it pay off? Well, the people that wrote the article at Forbes actually said that it does, that for the majority of people, getting an advanced degree. Now maybe, I don't know if they're strictly talking about people that were already employed when they went and the degree helped them get ahead in their career, but there actually was a monetary incentive for getting a master's. Do your observations at Bellhaven bear that out?
Absolutely. The latest research I've read is that people with degrees earn up to twice as much over their lifetime as a person without a degree.
Right.
It just bears to reason that a person with a master's degree that applies for a job and comes down to be a finalist against a person without a master's degree, they have that added leverage to be the one that's selected for that job. Another thing that you find in the competitive marketplace is that two generations ago, it used to be that a high school degree was sufficient
right.
for you to get that entry-level position.
Right.
And because of the way things have evolved here in the United States, the bachelor's degree has become more the door opener for you, that career starting degree. And most corporations expect their executives, their management, their leadership people to advance themselves with corporate training. Obviously, the easiest way to get training is through formal education. And so it's no surprise whatsoever to see them make more money because the prepared employee is the one that gets the opportunity for advancement in leadership.
You know, when I grew up, now my parents both had college degrees, but honestly, in the communities in which I lived and grew up, it wasn't necessarily common that people's parents had college degrees. This was a lot of them coming out of an agrarian background, and they had finished high school and perhaps worked at a trade all of their life, and so it was a bit uncommon. But you are right in that now it's kind of rare to meet an adult that doesn't have at least a two-year college degree. I mean, it's not impossible, but just in the workplace, it's rare to meet somebody that doesn't have at least a two-year degree. So I guess the what you're saying is the only way to differentiate yourself out of that is, in fact, to have a graduate degree, if that's what you're trying to do.
Well, that's true in the world of business and so many other professions. My dad was a master electrician,
right.
Did not have a college degree, but he had post-high school training and
right.
education that, as far as a journeyman electrician was concerned, he had as much education in that trade that could be had. My mother was a college graduate, and so as I was raised, even though my dad worked with his hands an electrician, it was just assumed that all of us would go to college. That's my mother's assumption, and you never want to upset mother.
Exactly. Well, it was also assumed that it was pretty much insisted that I was going to go to college, and all of my brothers and all of us have. But, you know, that you're right. I think that generation, that sort of World War II generation, that was sort of expected out of you that you're going to, you in fact are going to do that. I want to talk to you a little later on in the program actually about trades and sort of get your opinion on that a little bit. If you were trying to tell someone who is perhaps, as an adult, a good candidate as an adult to go back and get a master's degree. In about a minute or so, what do you have any criteria for that you would use?
getting a master's degree, the first requirement, of course, is going to be having a bachelor's degree. And so you must have that first and foremost. Right. But secondly, the ideal candidate is the person that, number one, wants to better themselves for, if you want to call it pride, self-actualization, self-satisfaction, that to have that sense of achievement and accomplishment in their life. That's an ideal candidate. Someone who wants to be able to move to the next level in their career is an ideal candidate. Someone who is doing well in what they're doing, and their management people have recognized that they have leadership abilities, and so they need to have that extra tool on their tool belt that we call the master's degree.
What about the cost of doing it? In the next segment, I want to talk to you about perhaps the difference in Belhaven, and it, which is a fairly small university, and the I suppose you're in competition with larger universities. Is the cost of Belhaven more or less, or roughly equal?
As a general rule, we find ourselves to be less expensive than most schools.
Really?
Yes, sir. We work very hard to make our price point very competitive in the marketplace. We just have been blessed by the Lord to have the opportunity to provide education, and we've got a model that we follow that allows us to offer it at a lower price to our students than some of the other schools do. One thing that we do to save our students money is that we provide the textbooks that they use.
Wow, in college you do that?
Yes, sir.
Wow.
And on the master's level as well, and so we find that that's a great way of maximizing our students.
You know, that was a huge expense when I was in school.
Absolutely.
Huge expense.
It saves our students anywhere from $500 to $600 a semester.
Exactly.
Not to have
yeah.
to buy these books that are so
expensive. What used to anger me was I would buy them, and then I'd buy a used one, and my plan was to sell it again. Well, then after I finished my semester, I find they're changing the course and not going to use, because what had happened, the professor had written another book.
Absolutely. And that happens quite often in higher education.
Exactly. So we had to go get the other, we had to go buy another book. Mike, you're a great guest. Hang around through the break. You're listening to Driven to Business. I'm Eddie Mayfield. We're glad you're here. More to come, so hang around. Welcome back to Driven to Business. I'm your host, as always, Eddie Mayfield, and we're glad that you were here. Here on Driven to Business, we like to talk about business. We like to talk about life. We like to talk about the principles of life. We like to talk about success. We even like to talk about failures so that we can learn from them. We're talking today with Mike Davis. Mike is the Director of Admissions and Student Services at Belhaven University. Mike, before the break, we were beginning to talk about Belhaven a little bit. We've had, as you know, we had Kim Chavez, your dean, right, on Driven to Business in the past. Give us some of the background on Belhaven University. Tell us about that.
Well, in a nutshell, Belhaven University is a four-year Christian liberal arts university. It's been around since 1883, so we've done higher education in the Christian world for quite a while. About 25, 26 years ago, we got into the adult education arena. It was before it became a popular arena because we had recognized that a large percentage of our student body was getting a little older. And so we began to tailor a program for adult learners. So we've done that now for 25, 26 years. At this point, we have 10 campuses in 5 different states that tailor our education product.
You're headquartered out of Jackson, Mississippi.
We're headquartered out of Jackson, Mississippi. Right. And, of course, we have the traditional campus for the 18 to 22-year-old kids with dorms and football teams and so forth. But also in Jackson, we have a adult and professional studies program in a separate building. It's housed in the LaFleur building. It's a office complex, just like you would expect to go to work at any other corporation. And then from there, we have expanded into Houston. They have 2 campuses in Houston. They have a campus in Memphis. There's also DeSoto County in Northeast Mississippi. There's a sister campus in Chattanooga with a teaching site in Dalton, Georgia.
Right.
Then there's the Atlanta campus. There's a campus in Orlando. So we have 10 campuses in 5 states.
What's your total student enrollment? Have you got
our total student enrollment's 3,750, give or take a few.
Wow. You know, suppose you were recruiting me, which I know you would not be, but suppose you were just for...
Oh, come on, Eddie. I'll offer you a scholarship.
Just hypothetically. And, you know, that I'm a kid coming out of school, and I'm looking at Belhaven, perhaps, versus one of the large state universities, like here in Georgia, University of Georgia or Georgia Tech or Georgia Southern or Georgia State or any of those.
All of those are great schools.
Right. What would you, I mean, what is, and not really a selling point, but what should I be considering if I were considering Belhaven versus those schools?
Well, there are several things that differentiate us in the marketplace. Number one, our program is tailored specifically for adults. And so in order to be a student at Belhaven University in Atlanta, you have to be at least 21 years of age.
Oh, wow, okay.
And you also have to have at least 1 year of relevant work experience. On the graduate level, we expect 2 years of relevant work experience. What that does, it populates our class then with professional adults who are not there to cut up and play around.
Right.
They're there to get their education. And so our classroom setting is a little bit more mature than what you would find in some of those other schools.
You know, settings. I teach an adult Sunday school class. I'm not sure that would always apply to our group.
Well, we do have our fun, okay? you know, you don't have to play those games that we used to play in college. Another thing that differentiates Belhaven University here in Atlanta from some of the other schools that you've mentioned is that we teach everything from the biblical Christian worldview.
Right.
We weave scripture into every class that we teach, and on the undergraduate level, we even require our graduates to have 12 hours in coursework that helps them to develop, understand, and articulate, and even defend the biblical Christian worldview. And so that's one of the things that separates us. On the graduate level, we don't require a specific course, but every class that a student takes, every session that they meet class, we talk about how their scripture applies particularly and exactly to whatever topic we're covering that evening in that class. Another thing that differentiates Belhaven from some of the other schools that you've mentioned is that our student-to-teacher ratio is much lower. Yeah. And so you're sitting in a classroom where you're going to get to know your professor. They're going to give you their cell phone number. They're going to give you their email address. They're going to be available to you. And when you call them, they're going to call you by name and know who you are. They're not going to turn you over to some graduate assistant or some other person that does that type of work for them.
I think that's a big surprise. I know that it was to one of my daughters in particular when she got to the University of Georgia under some professor there, and she found that most of the class was taught by a graduate assistant, not by the professor. That was a little bit of a shock to her, and honestly to me, because I was thinking, wait, but we're paying a lot of money.
Right. Well, one thing about the professors that we use at Belhaven is that they're all experts in the particular field that they are teaching.
Right.
And so many of our professors are teaching because it's a passion of theirs, but they earn their living doing something else.
Right.
They run their own corporations. They work within the corporate world. We have one of our professors who is a chaplain in the United States Army stationed at Dobbins and is about to be deployed overseas again for a year. So we've got those quality type people teaching our students, but they teach out of a passion rather than out of a habit that they've developed over the years.
You know, in today's, some of the passionate arguments you hear these days regarding religion, and in particular Christianity and education, I think sometimes people tend to forget the history of higher education here in the United States, where, you know, that the Ivy League schools all actually started out as divinity schools, training pastors.
Absolutely.
And it's hard to even think of that now in some ways, given what, but you know, it has undergirded education both here in the United States and in Europe for a long time. So when you talk about a biblical worldview, you're actually talking about, this is not a new thing.
Absolutely. One of the wisest words of philosophy I ever have heard was given to me by a senior in high school that I was a good friend with when I was a junior. He looked at me as we were pontificating, as teenagers will do, and he said, you know, even if this Jesus thing is not true, the Christian lifestyle still offers the best way of life out of any other way of life. And I've thought about that through the years. Treat others the way you want to be treated. Take care of yourself. What a way to live.
I heard a Jewish businessman giving a speech, and he in effect said, "Why would anyone not want to live next to a practicing Christian?" He said, "You know, why would they not be a good neighbor when if they really believe that you should love your neighbor
as
better
yourself.
Than you, as yourself, and to do another as you would have them to do, and to be honest and thrifty, and all the things that we are taught to live as." And his point was, why in the world wouldn't anybody, even if you're an atheist, why wouldn't you want to live next to that guy? That was his argument.
I appreciate the fact that you called us practicing Christians, because none of us have reached perfection yet.
No, maybe. Well, not maybe. One day we will.
Absolutely.
But yeah, in the before that, we're all being changed by Jesus, I hope. Hey, when you are talking about, do you think it's okay? You mentioned that here at the Belhaven campus here in Atlanta, the majority of your folks have had a year. Well, all of them have had a year of work experience as a requirement. I sometimes think that it actually would do the country good if a lot of college students, whatever their age, were actually working and paying their way through school. Do you share that opinion?
I would not argue with you over that at all. There's an element of maturity that comes about when you're in the workaday world, where you're having to get up at 4 a.m. to be at work at 5 and get off at 3 and then have to go to bed at 9 so that you'll be refreshed and ready to go the next day. There's an element of maturity that comes out of that discipline. There's an element of growing up that happens so much on the college campus that if students had to work for a year or two or serve in the military for a year or two, those are lessons that they would learn
right
before they began their college experience, and it may help them become better students from the get-go.
Well, Mike, stick around during the break. More to come here on Driven to Business. Remember, we're streaming live on biz1190.com. We are podcast on eddiemayfield.com. And links to Mike and to Belhaven University will also be found on eddiemayfield.com. You're listening to Driven to Business. Back in a moment. Welcome back to Driven to Business. We're talking with Mike Davis, the Director of Admissions and Student Services at Belhaven University. Mike, you're on the faculty of a four-year liberal arts Christian college. Do you consider yourself in competition in any way with trade schools and so forth?
Yes and no. Obviously, we're competing for students with trade schools, other liberal arts universities, big state schools, and all of that sort of thing. There's a certain number of people in that population range that, obviously we're in competition with them for students, but I don't think we are in competition with them as an institution. And what I mean by that is not everybody is cut out to go to college. Where would we be without our plumbers, our electricians, the tradesmen, air conditioning, heating, HVAC people, especially in the heat of the summer here in Atlanta.
Right.
I remember the old story. Plumber handed a man his bill, and the guy was in shock because the plumber was charging $500 an hour. And the customer said, "Sir, I'm a noted surgeon. I don't make $500 an hour." And the plumber said, "Neither did I when I was a surgeon." And so not everybody's cut out to be a professional, as you want to use that term in reference to the style of work that they do. I thank God for tradesmen, especially when my air conditioning goes out or when my sink stops up.
One reason that interests me a bit is in our business, EMA, we work on electronic motor drives, and as a result, we have to hire either degreed engineers or probably as often just people that are skilled in electronics. And a lot of those, it's been noted that a lot of people in that and other trades, not just that trade, but in the trades in general, a lot of them are baby boomers.
Yes.
Which means they're leaving those trades in large numbers now because of retirement and so forth. And there doesn't appear to be a lot of people coming behind them. I was talking with Ben Hames, who's the governor's the director of a workforce in Georgia here a few weeks ago, and Ben was saying that you know, with the industry Georgia's trying to attract here, which will employ professionals at all levels, managers and all that, but what they need also are tradesmen, and the state of Georgia is investing quite a bit in trying to encourage people to enter the trades. Just from my vantage point in our church, where the majority of kids there do get out and go to a four-year school, I don't discourage anybody from that. I think if that's what you want to do, you should do that. But I do try sometimes to give them the idea that, you know, with trades being in demand, those are very high-paying professions right now. In fact, you know, you can go to a two-year trade-type school and come out of there and make what a kid's going to make coming out of college. I mean, right, to start with, at least, because you're in demand and they want you. And if you have any business sense about yourself at all, and you learn how to deal with customers, and you learn how to the business of running a business, either by attending night classes at a college like Belhaven or something like that, and learn some business expertise, and then start your own business, your income potential is equal to anybody's.
Absolutely.
At that point. And I do try to make that point to people. There's absolutely a place for, well, there's more than a place. We absolutely need people going to four-year colleges and going to liberal arts type careers, because we need that in this country. But at the same time, we do need the other. And the United States, one of the great things, as you know, that we've been sort of you're not born into classes around here. You know, you can be born in a project in Atlanta and end up being the president of a large university or something, or a large corporation, and that's the great thing about America. Mm-hmm. And so even the fact if you start in a trade doesn't mean you stay there. But I really do like the idea that people should give that some thought. What advice do you give? Let's say when you get a college freshman there about choosing a major, what advice do you give them? How do you?
The first thing I ask them is, what do they like to do?
Right.
What interests them? Do they like to work with their hands? Do they like a particular activity? Do they have a particular interest in a subject area? Exploring all of the possibilities out there for them. My son, for example, is a tradesman. He's a glazier for a glass company.
Right.
And he has no college. But he's a very good tradesman. He's one of the best glaziers in Chattanooga, and he's in high demand there. And so I'm proud of him for what he's doing with his hands. He
right.
does something his dad can't do.
Well, you're making a great point from the discussion we just had.
Absolutely.
And you know, there's also the fact that we're told by society that you must have these white collar careers when you don't really like white collar work.
Mm-hmm.
It's something I always tell people to try and visualize yourself doing that job and see if you really like it. You know, if you hate staying indoors and you don't like numbers and you don't like being exacting, and yet you tell me you want to be an accountant, really, mm-hmm. you should give that a little more thought, perhaps. But if you hate that, why would you do it?
Well, that's one reason why I always suggest that high school students try to find summer employment.
Right.
It was during my summer employment that I decided I didn't want to work for a county road crew and lay asphalt in 100-degree weather.
I'm surprised.
And so, but my son at his summer job began working for a glass company, and he's turned that into a career. And now what I offer in terms of advice to guys like him is, you make a decent living working for somebody, but how much more money would you make if you had other people working for you? And then that's where the college education comes in.
Exactly.
Because he learns the skills with the trade doing it, but then he doesn't learn how to manage people, how to balance his books, how to market his product, how to sell his company to the general public and generate business. And that's where I can help him then at the college level, because that's where he learns those particular skills.
You know, there have been volumes of books written about that exact thing. One of the, you know, a typical way to start a business in the United States, and you could name any skill you want to name with this, anything being a baker to being an electrician to being a plumber to whatever. The person gets very good at the trade, they start their own business, and then they start hiring people, and they begin to figure out, you know, really, I don't manage employees very well. I can't keep any help here.
Right.
And then the business literally implodes on itself because you find yourself running around doing all that. Mike, you've had to balance a a family and a career. I have to, and a lot of people have to do that. And it's one of those things. What's the danger of not keeping a balance in those areas of our lives?
Well, if you live an unbalanced life, you're going to lose part of your life. From my own personal experience, I did not balance my life well when I was coming up in my career. I didn't balance my educational and my work schedule well, and it cost me a marriage. The Lord's brought into my life a wonderful woman now, and we began to do things so that we maintain our relationship. The key to maintaining a balanced life is keeping your priorities in order. Obviously, your relationship with Creator is first and foremost the most significant relationship that you have. The second most important relationship that you have is a relationship you have with your family. And the way that I keep reminding myself that is when I begin to work more hours than I should, I come to the point where I ask myself, who's going to pick out the nursing home that I'm going to spend my last years in? Will it be Belhaven University, or will it be the sweet wife that I go home to every night? And so when I remember that it's the sweet wife that'll pick out my nursing home, I always want to keep her happy. And so that helps me maintain balance as well.
I read an article in, I think, Inc. magazine, although I can't swear to that, a number of years ago. And they were interviewing a guy, and I'm not going to name his name because I can't remember exactly who it was. And I've got a guess. I'm not going to guess. But he had built a very, very large corporation in the food business, prepared food business. And had just been wildly successful, was very, very wealthy. And all during the interview, they were basically asking him, this little Q&A kind of thing, they were asking him, how did you do it, you know, and how did you sell it? And it was very interesting, all that part of the article. But the very end, they asked him, they said, okay, you've had great success, so would you do it again? And you expect just a banal answer like, you know, well, sure, you know, it worked out great for me. But the interviewer said, the guy paused. He said, I'm not sure about that. Said, this business has cost me everything. He said, it's cost me my health. It's cost me my family. He said, and all it's given me in return is a lot of money. I'm not sure it's worth the trade. That's a fascinating little article to read that. And this is a person that was probably much more financially successful than me or most folks listening. Mm-hmm. And yet that's what he recognized. And that's a sad time to recognize that is toward the end of your life when you look back on it and say, you know, this wasn't worth it. And I think that's what you're trying to say, is that you've got to balance that out somewhere.
Absolutely. I just spent a Father's Day weekend with my son and two grandsons. And when we talked about the vacations we took when I was growing up and when my son was growing up, we didn't remember what hotel we stayed at.
Right.
We didn't remember what restaurants we ate at. We remembered being together. We remembered the trips. We remembered going out and doing things together. And so building the memory is far more important than building the business.
You know, life is measured. And I think this is primarily a business program. And we do celebrate entrepreneurial success on this program and don't apologize for it. And we're very happy to live in a country that celebrates it.
Absolutely.
And I'm very happy to be here for that. But there is a side to it. There's an undergirding principle there that, you know, when we all begin to measure our lives, we will rate those lives in terms of relationships, not in terms of money. Almost
Absolutely.
All of us will do that at some point.
I've never heard a man on his deathbed say, you know, I really wish I'd spent more time at the office.
Exactly. Nobody says that. But, you know, life has value because of relationships, relationships with our family, with our friends, with God. I mean, those are the relationships that do carry us through. And I think anyone being successful, because I think it takes a certain amount of drive to be successful in business. I know it does. I know that it also, from my own experience, it can be all-consuming.
Mm-hmm.
It can be, and I would expect the same thing could be true in education or anything else. It could be all-consuming if
Absolutely.
You allow it, and you just can't let yourself be consumed in that deal. You know, we actually have less than a minute here, so I'll come back to you. I'll ask the question, and we'll get back to it after the break.
Okay.
I wonder, you know, given today's, what we've talked about, if you strictly take, particularly an undergraduate degree, and you measure that against what it costs you in terms of the degree, and with a lot of kids coming out of college today being unable to get a job, it does seem like that's a lot that you could begin to question if that's a good investment. And I'd like after the break to come back and get your take on that. And I realize you're a college insider, but we'll still take your answer and enjoy it. You are listening to Driven to Business. Our guest today is Mike Davis. Great program. One more segment to go. I'm Eddie Mayfield. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the final segment of Driven to Business. Time flies by. Mike, I'm glad you're here. Hope you're having a good time. I'd set you up right before the last break with a question about the financial implications of investing in a college degree when in, and then you come out and you don't get a job. Now, I was always told, I'll just offset with this, that my dad always taught me that education is a value in and of itself. And I believe that. I do believe that.
It is.
But in today's environment, how do you weigh, what do you tell kids about that?
Well, I tell them several things. I ask them, first of all, is the car you're driving paid for? And most of them say no. I walked into a dealership with my dad or whatever, and he signed a note for $25,000, $30,000 for 5 years and promised to pay back $400 or $500 a month over those 60 months or so. I said, well, what about the house you're living in? Is it paid for? No, I've invested in it. I've got a monthly house note. I said, well, what about the career? What about yourself? What are you doing to invest in yourself? Your car is going to rust out. It's going to break down. Your house is going to need repair. The opportunity for you to live in that house more than 5 or 6 years, research has shown you won't do that. You know, you buy a house to live in for 4 or 5 years, and then you move, or you move up or down according to your family circumstances. So why would you not want to invest in yourself? Number one, you get to invest in the intelligence, the creative mind that God has placed in you. You get to study some things like history so we don't repeat it. You understand how the arts and literature have influenced our lives, and how some of the common things that even the uneducated say have come from Scripture and from some of the great works of literature. You understand the relationships in math and how they remain constant regardless of the discipline. You understand and begin to grasp the concept of thinking for yourself. Critical thinking is the terminology that they use. And that's a great gift regardless of what field you're in, because your entire life you're going to be bombarded with information from people who are trying to sell you things or trying to talk you into things.
You know, one would argue that one of the primary benefits of a college education is to teach you to think. And the fact of the matter is, your education cannot and certainly should not stop when you graduate from college. I mean, I'm still a learner now. New things are coming out all the time I have to learn about. And, you know, in our business, we've had to learn with changes in the market and so forth. People that don't pay attention and don't learn go out of business pretty quickly. You have got to adapt and learn, and that part of that is knowing how to learn and make logical decisions and look at data and figure it out.
Absolutely. You've got to be able to look at something, hear something that's been presented to you, and discern whether it is truthful or whether it's not, whether it's accurate or it's not, and you've got to have that benchmark to measure it against. And so I ask students, you know, why would you not invest in yourself?
Right.
And, you know, obviously they're investing their time and their effort and their energy. Education does cost money. We have to pay our light bill just like everybody else does, and we have to pay our professors and such as that. And so I find it interesting that as a society, our values have taught us that it's okay to plunk down a chunk of change that's quite significant for something that's not going to last 4 or 5 years.
Right.
Like a car.
That's a great point, actually.
And but it's, we question the wisdom of investing that same kind of money in ourselves when that kind of investment pays for a lifetime.
See, I'm making notes while you're talking. I'm trying to think of how to argue my wife Vicky into getting a new guitar. So I'm trying to think of this long-term investment in myself. You know what I'm saying?
Absolutely. I understand that, and I've got one I'll sell you if you're that interested.
Great idea. You know, Zig Ziglar, one of my favorite guys, the late Zig Ziglar, Zig had a saying that no one ever stumbles over anything sitting down. And, you know, you could put that in college to an extent. There are a lot of people I think about the fact that when Bill Gates enrolled in college, he did not plan on starting Microsoft. You know, that came about as he was going through. In fact, Bill Gates never finished college, as a lot of people know.
Right.
But he, you know, he in the process of his studies and in the process of just living his life, and that was part of it, he ended up with this great idea about that you could argue whether you like Bill Gates or not. You absolutely cannot escape the fact that what he did changed the world.
Absolutely.
And both him and Steve Jobs and all these guys. And that's it's been, I do like the idea of investing in yourself. I tell people it's the same thing we're talking about. Families, you invest in your business. You should invest in your family. And what you're talking about with vacations and so forth, that's part of investing in your family. Even if you're a person not going back to college, you should invest in yourself and reading business books. Stay up on your industry. Know what's going on in your industry. If you're in a technical business like I am at EMA, we have to keep up with technical changes, with the things that are happening. And failing to do that is going to set you up for failure in your business. And I think that's a great concept, the idea that – and that's a great answer to that, because you do hear that argument a lot about college is not worth the money nowadays. You have to pay all this money to go to college, and you get out and you don't get a job. Well, again, you have to view it as an investment in your life. This is your life. This is not 4 years. And the analogy with a car is a great idea, because we don't say that about a car. We spend a lot of money on a car that you know is worth thousands less the second you drive it off the showroom floor than what you paid for it when it was sitting there.
And when you drive on Atlanta roads, it's going to get dinged and hit and dented and
absolutely
lose even far more value. You know, Eddie, one of the things that I tell students is that's most valuable about a college education. We tell them that it's not designed to help them to think. We don't tell them what to think.
Right.
Because as you've already said, if you don't adapt, you'll die. And so as far as a businessman is concerned, and so we don't teach them what to think, but rather we teach them how to think for themselves.
Right.
And we get back to that critical thinking gift. And it's a developed gift. And so when you're talking to these professors, they are critical thinkers, and they teach you how to develop that skill that will serve you for the rest of your life.
Mike, there seems to be just, and if you listen to the radio or television or even just in the conversations on Facebook or Twitter or anything else, there appears to be a note of, I don't want to say pessimism perhaps, but just the idea that in our country here, our best days are behind us. And, you know, we see the rise of China and other things in the world. And there's a sort of fatalism that young people have, but yet you deal with college age people. How do you address that with them?
Their adult life is going to be a reflection of their particular attitude. New couple moved into town and asked the local grocer, what kind of folks live in this city? And he said, well, what kind are you looking for? He says, well, you know, the folks we lived with earlier, they were grumpy and nasty and had a bad attitude. He says, well, you'll find those folks right here in this town. Another couple showed up, asked the man the same question, and he said, what kind of folks were in the town you moved from? And they said, oh, they were happy and go lucky and very friendly. He says, you'll find those folks in this town. You know, attitude is so much an influencer of what we do. If we think we can do, if we think that it's possible, then we'll put the energy and the effort into it, and we'll either root hog or die over that. If we think negatively, if we think that, the world is coming to an end, there's nothing I can do about it, well, then you'll live in that negative reality. Life is what you make it. I believe it was Charles Swindoll that he said that life is 98% attitude, how you react to what goes around you.
There is a sense, I think, in which we're perhaps living in the greatest era of human existence. So I think that you could actually make that point as well as you can make the point that we're living in the worst. It's an astonishing thing.
Absolutely. There is more out there for students to become involved in terms of making a living. 30 years ago, the technology that we experience today didn't even exist.
It didn't exist when I started my business 24 years ago. It's amazing to me what's happened to us. Even that. Mm-hmm. Mike, you've been a great guest. Thank you so much for being on Driven to Business today. By the way, you can find links to Mike and to Belhaven University on eddiemayfield.com. Go there, hit blogs. You'll see a blog about Mike, and tell us all about it. The next program will be podcast on eddiemayfield.com. We're here every Saturday morning at 11 o'clock right here on Atlanta's Biz 1190. You've been listening to Driven to Business. I'm your host, Eddie Mayfield, and we'll see you guys next week.